Chapter 69. Trifle of an interlude that was acted, or picture that was shown, or game that was played, among them. The occasions for such tenderness towards him were so many, that her mind misgave her often. It would indeed be better to go back to the old house, and live again within the shadow of its dull walls, undisturbed. How few who saw sweet Florence, in her spring of womanhood, the modest little queen of those small revels, imagined what a load of sacred care lay heavy in her breast. How few of those who stiffened in her father's freezing atmosphere, suspected what a heap of fiery coals was piled upon his head. Florence pursued her study patiently, and, failing to acquire the secret of the nameless grace she sought, among the youthful company who were assembled in the house, often walked out alone, in the early morning, among the children of the poor. But still she found them all too far advanced to learn from. They had won their household places long ago, and did not stand without, as she did, with a bar across the door. There was one man whom she several times observed at work very early, and often with a girl of about her own age seated near him. He was a very poor man, who seemed to have no regular employment, but now went roaming about the banks of the river, when the tide was low, looking out for bits and scraps in the mud, and now worked at the unpromising little patch of garden ground before his cottage, and now tinkered up a miserable old boat that belonged to him, or did some job of that kind for a neighbor, as chance occurred. Whatever the man's labor, the girl was never employed, but sat, when she was with him, in a listless, moping state, and idle. Florence had often wished to speak to this man, yet she had never taken courage to do so, as he made no movement towards her. But one morning when she happened to come upon him suddenly, from a bypath among some pollard willows which terminated in the little shelving piece of stony ground that lay between his dwelling and the water, where he was bending over a fire he had made to caulk the old boat which was lying bottom upwards, close by, he raised his head at the sound of her footstep, and gave her good morning. "Good morning," apostrophe said Florence, approaching nearer, "you are at work early." "Apostrophe, I'd be glad to be often at work earlier, miss, if I had work to do." "Apostrophe, is it so hard to get?" "Apostrophe, asked Florence. "I find it so," apostrophe replied the man. Florence glanced to where the girl was sitting, drawn together, with her elbows on her knees, and her chin on her hands, and said, "Is that your daughter?" "Apostrophe, he raised his head quickly, and looking towards the girl with a brightened face, nodded to her, and said, "Yes." Apostrophe Florence looked towards her too, and gave her a kind salutation. The girl muttered something in return, ungraciously and sullenly. "Is she in want of employment also?" Apostrophe said Florence. The man shook his head. "No, miss," apostrophe he said. "I work for both. Are there only you two, then?" Apostrophe inquired Florence. "Only us two," apostrophe said the man. "Her mother has been dead these 10 years. Martha." Apostrophe lifted up his head again, and whistled to her, "Won't you say a word to the pretty young lady?" Apostrophe, the girl made an impatient gesture with her cowering shoulders, and turned her head another way. "Ugly, misshapen, peevish, ill-conditioned, ragged, dirty but beloved. Oh yes." Florence had seen her father's look towards her, and she knew whose look it had no likeness to. "I'm afraid she's worse this morning, my poor girl." Apostrophe said the man, suspending his work, and contemplating his ill-favored child, with a compassion that was the more tender for being rougher. "She is ill, then." Apostrophe said Florence. The man drew a deep sigh. "I don't believe my Martha's at 5 short days' good health." Apostrophe he answered, looking at her still, "in as many long years, eh? And more than that, John," apostrophe said a neighbor, who had come down to help him with the boat. "More than that, you say, do you?" Apostrophe cried the other, pushing back his battered hat, and drawing his hand across his forehead. Very light. It seems a long, long time. Apostrophe, and the more the time, apostrophe pursued the neighbor, the more you favored and humored her, John, till she's got to be a burden to herself, and everybody else, not to me, apostrophe said her father, falling to his work. Not to me. Apostrophe, Florence could feel who better, how truly he spoke. She drew a little closer to him, and would have been glad to touch his rugged hand, and thank him for his goodness to the miserable object that he looked upon with eyes so different from any other man's. Who would favor my poor girl, to call it favoring if I didn't? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the father. Eh, eh, apostrophe, cried the neighbor. In reason, John. But you. You rob yourself to give to her. You bind yourself hand and foot on her account. You make your life miserable along of her. And what does she care? You don't believe she knows it? Apostrophe, the father lifted up his head again, and whistled to her. Martha made the same impatient gesture with her crouching shoulders, in reply, and he was glad and happy. Only for that, miss, apostrophe said the neighbor, with a smile, in which there was more of secret sympathy than he expressed. Only to get that, he never lets her out of his sight. Apostrophe, apostrophe, because the day'll come, and has been coming a long while, apostrophe observed the other, bending low over his work, when to get half as much from that unfortunate child of mine. To get the trembling of a finger, or the waving of a hair, would be to raise the dead. Apostrophe, Florence softly put some money near his hand on the old boat, and left him. And now Florence began to think, if she were to fall ill, if she were to fade like her dear brother, would he then know that she had loved him? Would she then grow dear to him? Would he come to her bedside, when she was weak, and dim of sight, and take her into his embrace, and cancel all the past? Would he so forgive her, in that changed condition, for not having been able to lay open her childish heart to him, as to make it easy to relate with what emotions she had gone out of his room that night, what she had meant to say, if she had had the courage, and how she had endeavored, afterwards, to learn the way she never knew in infancy. Yes, she thought if she were dying, he would relent. She thought that if she lay, serene and not unwilling to depart, upon the bed that was curtained round with recollections of their darling boy, he would be touched home, and would say, "Dear Florence, live for me, and we will love each other as we might have done, and be as happy as we might have been these many years." Apostrophe, apostrophe, she thought that, if she heard such words from him, and had her arms clasped round him, she could answer with a smile, "It is too late for anything but this. I never could be happier, dear father." Apostrophe, apostrophe, and so leave him, with a blessing on her lips. The golden water she remembered on the wall, appeared to Florence, in the light of such reflections, only as a current flowing on to rest, and to a region where the dear ones, gone before, were waiting, hand in hand. And often when she looked upon the darker river rippling at her feet, she thought with awful wonder, but not terror, of that river which her brother had so often said was bearing him away. The father and his sick daughter were yet fresh in Florence's mind, and, indeed, that incident was not a week old, when Sir Barnet and his lady going out walking in the lanes one afternoon, proposed to her to bear them company. Florence readily consenting, Lady Skettles ordered out young Barnet as a matter of course. For nothing delighted Lady Skettles so much, as beholding her eldest son with Florence on his arm. Barnet, to say the truth, appeared to entertain an opposite sentiment on the subject, and on such occasions frequently expressed himself audibly, though indefinitely, in reference to a parcel of girls. Apostrophe, as it was not easy to ruffle her sweet temper, however, Florence generally reconciled the young gentleman to his fate after a few minutes, and they strolled on amicably. Lady Skettles and Sir Barnet following, in a state of perfect complacency and high gratification. This was the order of procedure on the afternoon in question, and Florence had almost succeeded in overruling the present objections of Skettles Jr. to his destiny, when a gentleman on horseback came riding by, looked at them earnestly as he passed, drew in his rein, wheeled round, and came riding back again, hat in hand. The gentleman had looked particularly at Florence. And when the little party stopped, on his riding back, he bowed to her, before saluting Sir Barnet and his lady. Florence had no remembrance of having ever seen him, but she started involuntarily, when he came near her, and drew back. "My horse is perfectly quiet, I assure you," said the gentleman. It was not that, but something in the gentleman himself Florence could not have said, what that made her recoil, as if she had been stung. "I have the honor to address Miss Dombey, I believe?" said the gentleman, with a most persuasive smile. On Florence inclining her head, he added, "My name is Carker. I can hardly hope to be remembered by Miss Dombey, except by name. Carker." Florence, sensible of a strange inclination to shiver, though the day was hot, presented him to her host and hostess, by whom he was very graciously received. "I beg pardon," said Mr. Carker, "a thousand times. But I am going down tomorrow morning to Mr. Dombey, at Leamington, and if Miss Dombey can entrust me with any commission, need I say how very happy I shall be?" Sir Barnet immediately divining that Florence would desire to write a letter to her father, proposed to return, and besought Mr. Carker to come home and dine in his riding gear. Mr. Carker had the misfortune to be engaged to dinner, but if Miss Dombey wished to write, nothing would delight him more than to accompany them back, and to be her faithful slave in waiting, as long as she pleased. As he said this with his whitest smile, and bent down close to her to pat his horse's neck, Florence, meeting his eyes, saw, rather than heard him say, "There is no news of the ship." Confused, frightened, shrinking from him, and not even sure that he had said those words, for he seemed to have shown them to her in some extraordinary manner through his smile, instead of uttering them, Florence faintly said, that she was obliged to him, but she would not write. She had nothing to say. "Nothing to send, Miss Dombey?" said the man of teeth. "Nothing," said Florence, but my dear love, if you please." Disturbed as Florence was, she raised her eyes to his face with an imploring and expressive look that plainly besought him, if he knew which he as plainly did, that any message between her and her father was an uncommon charge, but that one most of all, to spare her. Mr. Carker smiled and bowed low, and being charged by Sir Barnet with the best compliments of himself and Lady Skettles, took his leave, and rode away, leaving a favorable impression on that worthy couple. Florence was seized with such a shudder as he went, that Sir Barnet, adopting the popular superstition, supposed somebody was passing over her grave. Mr. Carker, turning a corner, on the instant, looked back, and bowed, and disappeared, as if he rode off to the churchyard straight, to do it. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.